Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday, live at Flower Express in Rivergate, just in time for Valentine's Day. Super Bowl in the books, the NFL season in the books, and we say hello now to ESPN NFL analyst and Innsworth head football coach Tim Hasselbeck, who is with us now. Are you still at Disney?
I'm not still at Disney, back in Nashville, but Mickey and Minnie said hello, especially to Joe.
That's good.
We saw you riding the teacup with Sam Darnold. We thought that was really cute.
Yes. I can do the drops. Like, I'm not doing, like, the spinning, though. The spinning just makes you want to throw up.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, I get it for sure. Seattle defeats New England 29-13 in Super Bowl 60. Sam Darnold did what he needed to do. Kenneth Walker, the MVP, 27 carries and 135 yards. And so I guess, Tim, old-school football coaches that think it's a run game and defense that wins championships, they're feeling pretty good today.
I mean, yeah, it's a formula that works, right?
Sure.
And I think that that's probably the beauty of what Seattle has done. They definitely, you know, identified certain traits that they wanted out of defensive guys that they would draft or go find in free agency. That was a defensive-led team. You think about two games against the 49ers that were big late in the year, give up 9 points in eight quarters, and then, you know, do what they did to New England's offense in the Super Bowl. So, yeah, that definitely was a formula that worked. And I think the thing that, you know, for people that didn't watch Seattle all season long, they really weren't running the ball successfully for much of the year. So the run game kind of came on later in the season. Kenneth Walker obviously had a big game. And ultimately, that's a pretty good formula when you can do that. And, you know, when we talk about playing defense, it's can you stop the run on early downs, and then can you do a great job of rushing the passer without always having to bring pressure? And, you know, they could do those things.
Drake May turns the ball, has two interceptions. I think there was a fumble as well, sacked six times. Looking at this through the eyes of a quarterback and a coach, what did you see from him that obviously he's going to have a whole offseason to think about, but that he needs to work on, that also credit to Seattle for being able to exploit some of those things?
Yeah, here's what I would say. I thought in the first half, I thought May actually was fine. He just was getting no help from anyone around him. And so at that point, it was like, look, it's not going great. It's going to be a bit of a defensive battle, but he just needs some guys around him to start making some plays. And that includes guys up front just, you know, winning matchups. But then I thought what happened in the second half is his clock was sped up because of the pressure. And then he started to play poorly. So, you know, I don't know that I have some type of feeling where I'm like, yeah, hey, he needs to fix this. He needs to do this better or they're not going to be any good or he's not going to be as good as people think that he can be. I don't think that there needs to be an overreaction. I think that's going to be one of the challenges for him is that he had this game where he's going to look back at it. He didn't play his best. I think there are a lot of factors for it, and it's going to be hard to get over that. And, you know, and then if he does make it back or gets back into the postseason, to not have the magnitude of the moment be something, you know, that chokes the way he plays. And, you know, I don't believe that it will, but it definitely has for some guys in the past.
I'll bring this up, and it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, but because of who he was playing. We all remember Sam Darnold in the Ghost game, and he's seen ghosts when he was with the Jets and all of that. Did you see some of that with Drake May, that, you know, the pressure was there, you talked about the clock speeding up, that maybe it was just first time in a moment like that where he was seeing some things that maybe weren't there?
I would say this. I don't know that he's necessarily seeing things that weren't there. I think that when you're getting knocked around as a quarterback, it's just – look, it happened to Mahomes against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Happened to Brady against the Giants. Like, I don't want to be in this scenario where I'm like, Yep. Just 23 years old, couldn't handle the moment. Because I actually don't believe that that was it. I think it's more just a matter of if that was a week three game against the Carolina Panthers at 1 o'clock, like, I think it would have felt that same way. And so I don't think it's the magnitude of the game. I think ultimately what it was is, look, the first few third downs, protection gets blitzed and he gets sacked. I mean, it's just when that happens to you as a quarterback, you think, all right, I got to speed it up a little bit. Then you have a long halftime. He's got an over route that's open. He misses it. He has a corner route that's wide open. He misses it. And then he, you know, the little pressure in his lap, you know, kind of throws one up down the middle of the field where you're like, I don't know what you're doing. I just think that everything sped up for him, and it just is a bad feeling as a quarterback when that happens.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck this morning or this afternoon. Tim, Mike McDonald was on Jimmy Kimmel last night, and he said Seattle fans outnumbered New England fans 75-25. That forced New England to use a silent cadence, which gave us an extra juice on defense. When your head coach is saying that, and you got a good defense, right? I mean, that all plays into what you're talking about. I mean, the pressure, only having to use four guys, it seems like Seattle had a plan and stuck to it.
First off, you were up watching Jimmy Kimmel, which is why you said good morning, because what time did you wake up? Noon?
No, I'm seeing the clip right now on social media. Sorry. I haven't watched Jimmy Kimmel in 19 years.
So here's what I would say. I think some of Will Campbell's struggles at left tackle was that New England was using a silent count. And that's pretty wild. You know, probably proximity, you know, to their home stadium and fans and things like that probably lent the environment to be a little bit more pro Seattle than New England. And that can 100% impact the game. So, sometimes I think if a coach says that, it's like he's just playing to his fan base. But when you look at the fact that they did operate out of a silent count, you know, the false start, I guess, in the first half by Campbell was the second half by Campbell was definitely because he's trying to anticipate the silent count. So, yeah, I think it's a real thing and do think it had an impact on the game.
Football is always trying to reinvent itself. It's cyclical. With how good Seattle did on defense and Houston's defense, everything, do you think the tide's turning a little bit to like, all right, we got to build that defense first, then worry about the offense? Because it's been – Seattle was so good with that defense and the pressure they brought. And you know how football is, Tim. It's always changing.
Yeah, and people try to copy what you're doing. Listen, I think that people have prioritized defense. I think they've prioritized certain things. But I also feel like if you just look at John Schneider, he drafts a 6'4" corner. He drafts, you know, and Tyreek Woolen. He drafts Nicky Manwari, who's like, you know, basically a version of Cam Chancellor, who was a linebacker playing safety. They prioritize Riley Mills, who had a sack just bull rushing, you know, Wilson, the left guard for New England, is a gigantic human. I think that there are things that they prioritized in terms of what they were trying to get in the draft. And then, you know, when you think about their free agent signings, guys that they clearly targeted because it felt like they fit what they do. So I do think defensively people are going to look at them and say, there's a method to their madness and a success to it that makes sense. And look, I would agree with them. But at the same time, I think you also have to credit them for getting other things wrong. Right. Like when they traded Geno Smith and went with Sam Darnold, people weren't screaming, "Oh my gosh, what an amazing upgrade."
Right.
Like that's not what people were saying when it happened. But John Schneider was right, you know, moving on from Russell Wilson because he got better with Geno Smith, and then he was right moving on from Geno Smith and going to Sam Darnold. So I think that if you try to recreate what they did just in certain areas and not do the whole thing, then I don't know that it's going to work.
I know that they'll lose a few players. Teams always lose players. But is Seattle built to make another run in 26?
I think so, because they have a young quarterback who I would think continues to play well. I think they'll probably get better around JSN at receiver. They'll have to figure out running back, but that's a position that's easy to figure out. I think what they've done in terms of who they've drafted on defense will be good. The challenge for them is going to end up being that I think the Niners will be good. The Rams are obviously going to be good. There are other good teams in the NFC that, you know, it's not just always going to be an easy path to the Super Bowl. But, yeah, I think they're built to be a contending team.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us from ESPN. We'll have more with him. Coming up next, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. Continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. Tim, now that the season is done, besides the Seahawks and the Patriots that just played in the Super Bowl, give me one team that you think is going to be the one to watch this offseason that could be trouble come next season.
Meaning, like, they'll make a bunch of moves this offseason and be significantly better?
Yeah. Yep.
I'm not positive. I would think that they would make a bunch of free agency moves. I think a team that can be really good would be the New York Giants.
Okay.
If you think about the moves that have already been made. They had Harbaugh. They have, you know, a quarterback that I think could potentially be a rising star. So, like, you know, much like if we looked at New England and said, all right, they added a coach that you're going to help them get better. And then they obviously spent a lot of money in free agency, but it was, you know, it wasn't necessarily like the biggest splashes when you think about the linebackers or the D line that New England signed. And they were significantly better by just doing a better job with the quarterback and then having, you know, receivers like Mac Hollins and even Stephon Diggs just, you know, play a little bit better. So I think the Giants would be a team that kind of fits into that mold. I don't know that that means they're doing, you know, a ton in terms of free agency, but I'm sure there'll be some moves.
How important would it be, looking at the Titans, Cam Ward going into his second year, you know, we know they need to address receiver.
Yeah.
Would it behoove them to try and find a veteran to add to that group? Or, you know, if they just continue to build with young receivers, do you think that that's good enough?
Yeah, I mean, I think you need to do both because the hit rate on receivers is not great. So, you know, I do think that there's going to be I think you have to do both things. So, I mean, just like take the Rams, for example. Like they got it right drafting Puka Nacua. But they also are like, yeah, like, well, let's make sure we get Davante Adams also. And so I think you have to do both things. I think you just, you know, when you add a guy that you know can play. So, like, I'm not saying that they need to be in the George Pickens game because he probably ends up getting franchised by Chicago. I don't know that that's necessarily the fit, you know.
In Dallas.
Sorry, Dallas. And, you know, and so, like, I just look at that Rashid Shaheed, who, you know, was traded from New Orleans to Seattle. Like, he's a good player. You know, so I think that Alec Pierce is a guy who, you know, I guess he could potentially, I doubt that he gets franchised in Indy, but that would certainly be an interesting one, especially in the division if you could get him in free agency. So, yeah, I think you have to attack it both ways. There's no doubt that that's a position of need.
One thing that our mid-morning show did today was they did the simulation with all these websites, you know, you can do of the Titans offseason. And one move that was made that kind of caught my attention was trading Will Levis to the Rams for a fifth-round pick.
Hmm.
I feel like that helps the Titans because you add another draft pick and – you know, you take away some of that awkwardness that's there. And on the other hand, it's good for Will Levis because how many times, Sam Darnold's a prime example, do we see a quarterback that everybody think might be broken go to the right system with the right coach and all of a sudden they come out much better on the other side? So with Stafford coming back, but, you know, obviously we know he's on the back nine of his career. Could the Rams be a good fit for Will Levis as he continues his development?
Yeah, and I mean, shoot, like Jimmy Garoppolo could be up. He was their backup, right? So if you think about if you're the Titans, you know, you are going to want to make sure that you have, you know, a legitimate backup to play. I do think that's one of the things that, you know, some teams roll the dice with that I wouldn't feel comfortable rolling the dice with. I would want somebody that's played where I feel comfortable with them playing. So I don't hate the idea because, and you're exactly right, from Levis's point of view, I think that he would be excited for it. You know, Matthew Stafford's coming off of a great year, but he missed basically all of training camp because of a back injury. I would think that his offseason and preseason, he takes it pretty easy, which means Levis will get the work. That won't be the case in Tennessee. You're putting in a new offense. It's a young quarterback who's going to take every rep that he can. So, yeah, it would be better for Levis. And I think if you could get a fifth rounder from a place like that, like, yeah, I would absolutely be for it for the Titans.
What about, Tim, finding somebody, backup quarterback, if Levis is gone, who knows Brian Daboll's system, and I'm bringing up Tyrod Taylor, who's played with Daboll, yep, knows the system. He could come in and be that voice to Cam that's not a coach. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea, especially somebody that, you know, can be the translator for the quarterback, or the quarterback coach or coordinator. Yeah. I think I've explained this to you before about my experience in Philadelphia. Donovan McNabb was the quarterback. Coy Detmer was one of the backups. And, you know, oftentimes Pat Shurmur, who was the quarterback coach, you know, when Donovan was, you know, kind of eye rolling and didn't want to listen, you know, he'd go to Coy and be like, hey, I need him to do this. Okay. Can you make sure that he does this?
Wow.
And Coy would be like, yeah, I gotcha. And Donovan would listen to Coy. And it just, sometimes that's how it works. So, yeah, like you're exactly right that somebody like Tyrod Taylor, who knows his role, you know, in terms of where he is in his career, would certainly, I think, be a guy that you could say, yeah, this guy is good enough and capable enough to, you know, if he's got to start three games, can he help us win two of them? Yes, he can. And go that route. But I think that, look, when you just look at, you know, there are a lot of guys that are headed to, you know, like free agency at the quarterback position. I mean, there's a bunch that have starting experience. Some of them, you know, are not teams that the Titans, you know, Marcus Mariota is not going to back up in Tennessee, but
right.
But there are other guys that, look, if they were available and the price was right, Tyrod Taylor, shoot, Zach Wilson, Kenny Pickett, Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, you know, you run down the list, like, you know, Trey Lance. Like, you know, there are guys like that that I think you certainly would be worth, you know, checking it out.
I would take Marcus as the backup. I'm with you. I don't think he would do it necessarily, but I wouldn't be opposed to that.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. I don't think he would come back. I could be wrong. I mean, if it's the best opportunity for him, maybe he will, but yeah, and I
mean, everyone's gone, so
yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a different group.
Yeah, correct. It just, you know, it doesn't typically happen. And so
yeah.
I think the other aspect of it is there are going to be guys, like Kyler Murray's a good example of, there are going to be these guys that are, like, see themselves as starters still, that are going to be like, all right, how do I get to Atlanta? How do I get to Minnesota? How do I get to, you know, some of these spots that I feel like, you know, are kind of like Anthony Richardson in Indy. You know, how do I do what Daniel Jones did? How do I do what Ryan Tannehill did here
right.
in Tennessee with Marcus Mariota? There's going to be guys that do that. And then there'll be a next wave that's not nearly as expensive. And that's why I do think, you know, the idea of trading, getting something for Levis, and then, you know, signing a backup that you feel comfortable with makes sense.
How frustrating, though, was that for Pat Shurmur when you're trying to tell the quarterback to do something, he doesn't listen to you? That drives me crazy.
Yeah, I mean, listen, welcome to coaching.
Right.
I mean, you know, that's hey, listen, I'm not saying that to be hard on Donovan. Donovan was great. He listened to coaching. But sometimes, I mean, sometimes it would be as simple as, hey, look, you know, Andy hasn't been happy with, you know, how practice has been starting. And so when we go to individual after, you know, stretch and your chin strap's unbuckled and, you know, you're kind of jogging across the field rather than, you know, having some intensity to the drill, like everyone's looking at you, we need you to step it up. You know, like that's not always a message that every player does a great job of listening to the coach hearing it. And so when the backup, just as like whether he says something or not, when he's paired up with that guy and he's going at a fast pace, well, like message received, ultimately the goal is achieved. And, you know, that's one of the great things about being on a team.
I love it. All right, Tim, our question of the day is, what's the oldest T-shirt in your closet that you will not get rid of?
Oh, wow. That's a good one. I will say I've got some of these performance fabric T-shirts now that have shown up whenever they started doing that. So I'm probably sitting at something at least 2000, probably at least 16, 17 years old.
Nice. Do you still have your shower shoes from the Cardinals?
No, I definitely left those in Arizona, but I paid for them though, so I, you know, I donated them back. What was the answer to that question for you guys? I bet you Joe's got some pretty old gear.
Well, I got a football T-shirt from junior college that I have not put on in probably 38 years that I just cannot get rid of, and I'm sure it doesn't fit me. But I just can't get rid of it. It stares at me like, hey, you going to wear me today? I'm like, nah, but just stay in the closet. That's what I got.
I have a shirt of my dad's that he was his restaurant that he wore all the time. And now that he's gone, like, I'll never get rid of it. So
the sentimental value ones are, like, absolutely great. Like, we've got an old Patriots jersey that we put up in the house, you know, of my father's, you know, because of the game and because he started his career at the Patriots. So, like, I get that. The one that it's like your own stuff, I don't know that I'm understanding that one.
Well,
Joe. I don't know.
How many of your jerseys do you have?
You know, I think I have most of my jerseys, but they are, like, they are in an attic in a box probably – you know, with an animal that's chewed through the box. You know what I mean? Like, they're not, like, displayed or anything in the house.
So, I asked that because I've asked this question to D-Mace before, and he's like, he has, you know, Ravens, Titans. He gave me his Jets jersey, which I thought was funny. But he has that stuff, but it's more for his kids than it is for him.
Yeah, I do think that Elizabeth actually said this to me the other day. She's like, you know, I don't want to get rid of stuff that is like from yours from playing, and some of it is, you know, obviously with my dad passing in April, my mom's gone through some stuff, and look, having some in my kitchen right now, because what Elizabeth put out, like, you know, during the Super Bowl, are game balls, painted game balls that my father was awarded at the Patriots.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's those types of things that, you probably don't ever, you know, want to get rid of because they can be handed down. Now, I would be lying if I said that my brother and I didn't play catch with those game balls as young kids.
Right.
Minor issue at the time, but, I think it's holding on to that stuff. Seems like it's worth it.
We need to bring back turf cleats. I had a great pair of turf cleats that got stolen, and I was so mad, Tim. Turf cleats were the best and worst because they look good, but when you wear them around the neighborhood, they were like, yeah, turf cleats. Nobody understood the power of turf cleats.
Well, if they bring back those, that means they have to bring out Breck AstroTurf. That would not be good. But I bet you played in a pair of, like, ponies or something back then.
I did.
What was the brand?
Yeah, it was ponies, yeah. And then we had Spalding.
Ooh, Spalding.
Yeah, right? I mean, those were the ones because we didn't have a lot. Those were the ones that all the kids wore because we didn't have a lot of money. But those were the ones that just they looked good and felt good. So it's Spalding. Those were the cleats. But then in college, we got ponies. So I moved up in the world, Tim.
I mean, that's pretty good. I don't – I was – I was more Reebok Nike era. It was not a part of my dad. My dad was the Converse era. In fact, wore Converse in Super Bowl 18. So hadn't worn them all year. I think they actually paid him money to wear Converse all the way back then. So
speaking of sentimental, your father's Super Bowl ring, where's that?
Yep. My mom would have that. My mom would have that still. And I think, being one of three boys, I think we would all agree that I should be the one that gets it.
I will tell you this real quick. Funny story. I was watching the Raiders and the Redskins Super Bowl game, and when Theismann threw the interception to Jack Squirek, he gets to the end zone, and out of the corner of the screen was this huge number 87 bear hug Squirek and brings him down. That was your father.
That's right. And then blocked. I think I told you guys this before. Blocked an extra point in that Super Bowl. And, came home. We were living in Massachusetts, so he's playing for the L.A. Raiders. Goes to Massachusetts for the offseason. Goes back at the end of the offseason for, the season to start. And he's got boxes and boxes of mail in his locker. And he's like, this is crazy. I mean, this must be maybe like Marcus Allen's fan mail that just was overflowing, and they just decided to put it in his locker. What he found out was, it affected the point total of the game when he blocked the kick. And so there was both good and bad, letters from people that maybe had an interest in the outcome of that game and the points that were scored in it.
Oh, man. Oh, that is awesome. Tim, enjoy it. Enjoyed it as always. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers, fellas.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst. And also the head coach at Innsworth joining us. That was great. I love when we can go down memory lane and talk about his dad and everything. Tell us where we are today.
So we're live at Flyer Express out in Rivergate. And listen, guys, for Valentine's Day, we got you covered. Here's all you got to do. Go to flowerexpress.biz. Flowerexpress.biz. Use the code BIGJOE at checkout. What that does, it gets you $20 off the delivery fee. The delivery fee is free. Just go to flowerexpress.biz, put in Big Joe as the checkout, and then you get the delivery fee is free. And also, for the rest of the week, all week of Valentine's, when you order flowers from flowerexpress.biz, use the code 102.5. You get 10% off any purchase throughout the week. Just use the code 102.5, and you get the discount, 10% off, flowerexpress.biz. That's flowerexpress.biz.
On our text line, Doug and Franklin said, I worked for Pony when they were based here in Nashville.
Ooh, I didn't know they're based here.
Yeah.
Was that Genesco, Doug? Let us know. I'm curious about that now.
Very, very cool. We're live today. Flower Express in Rivergate. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.